You are listening to Waiting on Reparations, a production of iHeartRadio.
What's up? Happening?
I'm Lingua Franca.
I'm Dope Knife, and
we are waiting on reparations.
You know, we have been messing up on that for like the last like 4 weeks.
Fantastic.
We used to have it like in sync where we would come out like both at the same time. Then anyway, hurry up, motherfucker. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm good. I'm staying healthy, staying working, staying busy.
Fantastic.
I imagine you're staying busy. I mean, I'm just imagining that goes unsaid.
Yeah, right? we're voting on the city budget. By the time you all will be hearing this episode, we will have approved our $300-something million city budget.
So you definitely got it approved.
So yeah, I feel pretty cool. I feel like I got the votes for what I want to do. It's not everything, but it is still pretty transformative. We're like trying to raise the. We are going to raise the minimum wage for city employees to $15 an hour.
Oh, word.
Fund a non-police crisis response agency, and like increase our homeless services like funding by like 200%. Like a lot of really dope stuff. Yeah, not everything I wanted, but pretty close.
I mean, I'm looking at you. You don't seem like as enthusiastic as I would imagine you'd be with what you're saying.
It's like, I know. Yeah, I mean, you always want bigger and better. Like, obviously, I would love to just. I often speak as if, like, well, if I was the czar of Athens, Georgia, this is what we would do. But I am not. I am subject to the laws of the state and the federal government. And so there's some things we can't do. Like, you know, we can't raise the citywide minimum wage, but we can raise it for our, you know, our employees, which is going to affect a couple hundred people. So, like, stuff like that is pretty cool. But still, there's so many people living in poverty. You know, like, we can do that little bit that's within our control, but there's, like, still so many issues left unresolved. So if I don't sound more stoked about it, that's why.
Well, just, you know, just for your personal health, you know, just, like, enjoy that there's a larger battle, but enjoy the win, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like take some time, because, like, there's a lot of hard work, I'm sure, went into that.
Oh, my God. So. Yes, it's been a nightmare, but it's almost over, and then, yeah.
Well,
and then me and you were going to catch up in Savannah.
We got
a show coming up.
We got a big show coming up in Savannah at El Rocco. That's part of the
half. So there's a half marathon in Athens called the Ath Half. And so they're having a music festival. A bar owner who's from Athens, who recently relocated to Savannah to open a bar down there, is having a music festival of predominantly Athens artists that is a play on the name of this half marathon that's here. It's pretty silly. But the lineup is pretty great. We'll be playing at El Rocco Lounge on Saturday, June 26th. So y'all should come through. It should be real fun if you are in the Georgia area or farther afield. I've talked to folks from Hartford, Connecticut, Birmingham, Alabama, Athens, Ohio, who are coming down for it. I think people are like thirsty for
live music
after a year and a half. So people are coming in from all over to catch this show. And I hope you will as well if you're listening to this.
It's going to be exciting times.
I will be very stoked to see you.
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it.
But next week is also the Democratic primary for the New York City mayor's race.
New York.
And New York being the birthplace of hip-hop, we thought we'd take a look at some of the front-running candidates, some of their controversies, their stances, and why all of this matters for us, for, you know, the spectators farther afield than Gotham City. I don't really watch sports, but for me, New York politics is kind of my spectator sport. I think just given its outsized just place in the public imagination, like, you know, New York is so dominant in our media. So many media corporations center themselves there, like physically their offices. And so a lot of their narratives end up getting amplified in the national media as well. It's just something that kind of happens. It's like happenstance, like, oh, you just are awash in news about New York. But I think to a broader extent, it also feels like a sense of like foretelling what is possible for someone, you know, located in the South. Looking at a place like New York, like what could we achieve? What gamut can be run in terms of like public policy. What does like a really progressive place look like? Stuff like that. And so that's to me why I kind of get into New York politics too.
I can't really say that coming up that I was, you know, had all that big of an interest in New York City politics. It's been one of those kind of things that, you know, usually it comes up in the peripherals, you know, where it's like it's going on and I'm aware of it, but rarely have I ever been into the minutiae of any of that stuff. I mean, there's the, you know, stuff that got national coverage that I remember. Like, I remember when Giuliani won. I remember when Hillary Clinton was running for Senate. You know, like, I remember when de Blasio won. I remember AOC winning. Just stuff that would get the attention of somebody who's otherwise not really following it like that. This past one, just, this seems to have been, you know, it, you know, from my perspective, the one of the more nationally publicized New York races. I don't know if that's because of the involvement of, you know, candidates like Andrew Yang or Maya Wiley, who have like media exposure, but yeah, it's like I'm this one kind of seems way more in my face than New York races of the past. Oh, although in the last month or so, I think it's kind of cooled off a little bit. I mean, I don't know. I mean, at least it doesn't seem like it's not that big of a national story.
Do you think it has to do with like the increased politicization of like just mainstream discourse? Like over the course of the pandemic, I feel like people have just been paying attention to politics more.
Yeah, no, definitely.
I know you have always paid attention to politics. But, like, I never, like, you know, I've become increasingly involved in politics, even as an elected official, paying attention to policy in other places a lot more throughout the pandemic, both from the stance of being, like, held captive by I don't have fucking shit elsewhere to go or do, you know? And also just, like, caring more because I've seen, like, oh, shit, public policy is failing us in a huge way. Maybe I should start learning about what other municipalities are doing about it or how they're failing so we can avoid the same pitfalls.
Oh, no, I mean, I agree. I think that's it. Like, totally. I think people have generally like, more of an interest in politics. And then, you know, not even to, like, state it like it's any sort of, like, conspiracy or nefarious thing. But I think, like, the media ecosystem recognizing that people have that increased interest, it's like you're always looking for the next story to present. You know what I mean? The next narrative, the next thing. So it's like, In the conversation of political theater, it's like this race is like an interesting show to watch. You know what I'm saying? And I think it's one of those series that's out there. The New York race. It's something that they can fill up, you know, time with on MSNBC or CNN or whatever. So thus, it's kind of in my face more than usual. It's like, oh damn, I know, you know, I'm going to get put on to some of the things that are going on in this episode, just like anybody who's listening who's not up to speed. But I do know more about this race than I have other New York races in the past. So
for sure.
We're going to get to all of that and more after the jump.
So incumbent mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio, is not running again, not because... I mean, we just can't because of term limits. But this has opened the field wide for prospective candidates to fill his soon vacant seat. This race differs than most municipal elections in that in 2019, voters decided by referendum to allow ranked choice voting, which empowers them to rank up to 5 candidates. If a voter's first choice doesn't get traction, his or her votes transfer to the second choice, and that process of redistribution continues until one candidate has more than 50% of the votes. So,
I don't like that.
What? You don't like
I don't
that?
Like what do you? I mean, you know, I mean, I'm sure somebody could like completely articulate to me why, like maybe mathematically or whatever that makes sense. But I just think when you're adding in like this extra layers of it instead of it just being simple. It's not even that I think, oh, something's going to go wrong or whatever. It's just like, I feel if something happens and somebody doesn't get enough votes, give people a choice to vote again. That's what I would say, as opposed to like having something already built in there to, you know, some mechanization to transfer a vote.
Yeah. I mean, my understanding is that from a fiscal perspective, it's cheaper than holding a whole nother election.
True.
Both for the Board of Elections offices and then, like, you know, candidates themselves. It's just like automatic runoff. And then also there's less lesser than two evilism. So it's like, let's say in the 2020 presidential election, there was ranked choice voting.
Yeah.
And somehow Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders are both up there. So as it stands, people might choose, oh, well, I don't want to split the Democratic vote, so I have to vote for Biden to make sure that he beats Trump or something like that. But if it were a ranked choice voting situation, you could rank, you know, you could just go by your heart, like, oh, I'm going to rank Bernie first, let's say, and rank Joe Biden second, and then not rank Trump at all.
Yeah.
And if Bernie loses, then your vote still goes to Biden. So it's okay. Like, oh, I don't feel as threatened by, like, oh, I'm going to throw my vote away, or, oh, like, I have to vote for the candidate that's more likely to win. You can just vote your conscience a little bit, like, more directly.
But
I guess is the logic behind ranked choice voting.
But, I mean, do you think that it's more of a... do you think it's more of a fiscal consideration, or do you think it's more that?
I think that people outside of the two-party system favor it because it gives more opportunity for people to vote their conscience with regards to third-party candidates, Libertarians, Green Party, PSL, whoever you want to name, Independents. So you can rank them, and then if you want to rank Democrats a little farther down as like, oh, I would prefer these over these other guys, like, your preference in that regard is still counted to a degree, rather than it not mattering at all. It's either you vote for this guy or that guy, and period, done.
So are you 100% with it?
I think I'm with it. Yeah. I mean, I think that particularly with partisan elections, because this is we're mostly talking about the Democratic Party primary today.
Yeah.
But with partisan elections, you're not as bound by partisanship. So it's like, if you really don't fuck with the Democrats, but like you fuck with them more than the Republicans, you can register those degrees of like fuckwitability on your ballot.
Yeah.
Like, I really, you know, I'm going to vote like Green Party or Working Families Party or like whatever. But I really don't want these other motherfuckers
to win.
So I can put Biden on there somewhere. To like, you know, I wouldn't mind him so much. Whereas right now, there's no shades of gray.
It's just either one or the other.
So you're Jill Stein voter? So what do you want? You gave us Trump. Like, all that shit is like gone. So, I mean, I'm not as like super well-versed in like the deep policy considerations behind why ranked choice voting rocks. That is to the extent to which I know that it's better than what we currently have. And so it's kind of cool to have it here.
You know, I mean, again, it's like it made me shake my head upon hearing it, because it's like, just initially, anything that adds an extra step and a complication to it, I'm like, but you know,
it also takes a step out.
Exactly.
You don't have to go back and vote again in a runoff.
Yeah, you know, that's true. That's true.
So that's cool.
As of late May, 13 candidates had qualified for the Democratic Party primary and two of the Republican Party primaries. Though in the Democratic stronghold like New York, it's basically a given that the winner of the Democratic primary will become the next mayor. Similar thing that we had in the, what was that last episode that we had?
Talking about Larry Krasner.
Same sort of situation.
Attorney's race, yeah.
So the major Democratic candidates include former state senator and current Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams, former commissioner of the NYC Department of Sanitation, Catherine Garcia, former Citigroup executive Raymond McGuire, former social services nonprofit CEO Diane Morales, Guardian Angels founder Curtis Silla, NY comptroller Scott Stringer, former counsel to Bill de Blasio Maya Wiley, who many people might recognize from MSNBC, and former presidential candidate Andrew Yang.
As well as previous guest on the show, rapper Paperboy Prince.
Paper.
Much love to Paperboy Prince.
So Yang came out the gate as the clear front runner in 2020, but has since slipped in the polls, with which ranked choice voting is kind of fickle predictors anyway.
making room for centrist candidates like Eric Adams and Catherine Garcia to shine, particularly in the aftermath of Garcia's endorsement by the New York Times.
I'm honestly super stoked about this. I was very worried for a while that Andrew Yang was the front runner in this race.
It seemed that way.
Because it's just like, I mean, I give him props for popularizing the idea of universal basic income. But like, it's literally like he read a one sheet on what that is one time and blew up because he popularized it. And he never read a single fucking thing about any other piece of policy ever again. And it's just like, I'm a very entitled tech bro. Like, I deserve power. And God, he just fucking sucks, man.
I get the sense from Andrew Yang. I mean, my feelings, you know, I'm not Yang Gang or nothing. My feelings aren't as, like, strong in the negative about him. But I get the sense that he's doing what he feels he needs to do to rise in the ranks politically in the Democratic Party. You know what I mean? I just get that sense from him. And I get that, you know, should he come out and win this or whatever other office that he seeks, I have a feeling that whatever it is that the way he governs will be different from what he's presenting. That's how I feel. Whether that him becoming like a Bloomberg-esque sort of figure that's like, you know, a Republican, but, you know, it has a D next to its name, or something that maybe is more progressive than he's putting on. I don't know. But I get that sense that we're not seeing the real Yang.
Yeah, I mean, I guess without like a strong like policy track record as a political outsider to an extent, it's hard to tell like how strong a backbone he has to like truly enact the policies that he like preaches. Because to me, he seems like a wet noodle who will just be controlled by capital and like whatever the policy experts around him tell him to do. And he is surrounding himself with like very pro-carceral, pro like capital like fuckers. So
yeah,
so it's just like, well, yeah, I don't know how, like, are you gonna do what you're gonna say you're gonna do, or are you gonna do what everyone around you tells you to do, and like you're just surrounding yourself with like neoliberal shows?
See, I get the opposite, you know, sense from him. I have a feeling that he's gonna do what he wants to do. It's just a matter of what is that he wants to do. Like, you know what I mean?
It's
like,
just unclear.
Exactly.
I just don't really know what you're trying to do here, bro. Yeah. Before we move on, there's like the fact that his family left New York City during the pandemic, and like he's just very out of touch with the lived experience of a lot of New Yorkers. That's a very wealthy person, and all these other he got dunked on by Paperboy, like literally dunked on in a basketball tournament by Paperboy Prince recently, which I love. And you know, just
so wait, where is Andrew Yang from again?
I don't know where. Wait, let's hold on. Let's do this. Andrew Yang, where are you from? Andrew Yang, where are you from? Oh, he was born in Schenectady, New York. Mm. So he's from New York, yeah. But I guess
I didn't associate him with being like a New York.
Well, I think he gives off a very like Silicon Valley vibe.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, probably has ties to them or works, you know, out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a certain like unmoored thing about being so that wealthy where it's like, are you from anywhere when you can be anywhere that you want to be at any point?
I definitely felt when I did hear that he was running, I do remember feeling like, can you just run for...
Can you just do
you just
that?
Run for whatever you want.
Are you allowed to just do that? Apparently he's from New York. Or like New York State. So, all right, I'll give him that. But then there's Eric Adams, who is a former cop of 22 years and who has received the backing of the New York State Troopers Union as well. General. I mean, he just seems like very status quo dude. He's previously claimed that the movement to defund the police is led by affluent white people, which I think might be kind of true to varying degrees, depending on where you are. I mean, like, as someone that like ascribes to that movement, and like I follow like a lot of like black feminist leaders who have been doing that work for many, many years. But I also live in a predominantly white town where predominantly white people were calling for that in our particular like geographical context.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, but he's recently come under fire for allegedly living in New Jersey, which then led to a very awkward photo shoot at his supposed New York home, in which he was shown sweating profusely, surrounded by furniture that totally wasn't dragged into place by frantic campaign staffers or anything. And also claiming in a recent forum that online education during the pandemic has proven teachers are capable of handling a 400-to-1 student-to-teacher ratio.
Yo, my dude.
Garnering vehement pushback from Congress folks like Jamal Bowman and AOC.
And deservedly so. What the hell is even that? 400-to-1?
What is he talking
Get the
about?
Fuck out of here.
Like, literally, do you even... Have you ever... Like, it's not even like, do you have children? Like, literally, have you ever met a child?
Yeah, I mean, have like, you ever been to school? Like,
have you ever been to school?
That's like a... I don't know, like... fucking Blade Runner class or some shit in the future where there's only one teacher for every 400 children. Get out of here. I don't know, when you were mentioning the fund the police thing, I'm sorry. It really gets me upset that the Democrats play into the Republican hands of like making such a big deal about the defund the police thing. I mean, whether you agree with it or not, or that's your stance or not, there is no establishment Democrat who's got a platform of defund the police. Like, which one? Who? It's all the people you'd expect.
Yeah. I mean, like, Cori Bush.
Yeah, I mean...
Rashida Tlaib.
But that's my point,
these are
you
all
can
the,
count
exactly.
them. Yeah, it's the ones that you would expect. It's like, if that's not you, that's not you. But, like, to complain about what activists are doing, like, if you're not for it, then don't be for it. You know? But don't try to stop other people from... being what they're for.
Yeah, it's like erasing your own people when it's like, okay, you can claim that, but then like they're like, oh, we lost because of, you know, defund the police or whatever, but it's led by affluent white people, but the only people talking about it in the Democratic Party are like Cori Bush.
Exactly.
Like, wait, Cori Bush? She's black, right? Like, yeah. Oh, this is, you know, does not compute. Blah, 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 blah. Sparks fly. It's anyway.
I'm sorry, I had to go off on that. It's been bugging me for the last few days.
And I, ever since talking to Matt a couple episodes back about neoliberalism, like, Eric Adams perfectly encompasses that in these few facts that we have spoken on him, that, like, oh, we can have 400-to-1 teacher-to-student ratio, like, defund the schools, but, like, make sure you support the cops. It's,
exactly.
like, shrinking social services everywhere else except in the way that you can control people and incarcerate them and make their lives home.
It's like the expected shit.
It's that. And he is running as a Democrat. Like, this is,
Well, I mean, that's anyway. New York politics. I know that much.
Yeah.
Now, on the progressive side of things, the field has been pretty split. So you got Scott Stringer, Diane Morales, and Maya Wiley, who one by one have effectively blundered themselves out of the running, leading progressives to line up behind Maya Wiley. Though once ranked number one and number two by Working Families Party, Scott Stringer has tumbled in support among progressives after two women came forward with decades-old allegations of inappropriate sexual advances. Diane Morales, who has run on slashing the police budget in half and guaranteeing housing for all, has seen the bottom collapse out of her campaign after allegedly firing dozens of staffers who attempted to unionize, leaving Wiley, who is a civil rights lawyer, formerly WFP's number three choice, but now seemingly their first.
Yeah, so I was really stoked about Diane Morales for a while just because she seemed like very, I don't know, maybe I fell for like the jargon of like social, I'll be really honest, loved like just like social justice, grassroots movement stuff. She seemed to surround herself with like a lot of really badass women of color that had been organizing for a long time. And, you know, seeking to prioritize, to center the concerns of working class New Yorkers. And so I was like, oh, this bitch seemed pretty tight. Yeah. And like, I don't know, running for the mayoralty of the biggest city in the country on like, yo, I'm going to cut the police budget of New York City by $3 billion. Mm-hmm. Regardless of whether that's viable, I'm like, that's fucking bold. That's like hard to come out and say.
Yeah.
So like, props for you for that. But then, yeah, the news came out about the attempted unionization, and then she fired a bunch of people. And then I read this letter that was actually published by a 15-year-old volunteer of hers that she was, appointed, like, the field captain for the Queensborough area. 15 years old, working, like, 40 hours a week for Diane Morales. Promise, yeah, like canvassing until like late at night in like dangerous areas by yourself.
Asked
her to like become salaried. Like, hey, will you hire me onto the campaign? I'm working my ass off for you after I get out of high school in the afternoons. And Diane Morales was like, nah, like, what?
That's no good.
You should do it for the movement. Do it for the movement. You know, and I was just like, damn, that's. Yeah, that's like child labor exploitation,
yeah, yo,
man.
That's some straight up kids in a coal mine shit.
And there's a lot to be said when it gets into like, electoral organizing specifically and exploitation of young people. Like, I've seen it happen a lot of times. I've had a lot of friends. I've worked in campaigns myself, and I know how grueling they are. And like, I think a larger conversation needs to be had about like respecting the dignity. Like, if we're gonna be like pro worker people, candidates, elected officials, etc., like also extending those rights and those dignities to people who get us elected. Just because we're working in a movement to change society doesn't mean like you bleed and cry blood over this campaign. Like, you deserve to get paid. You deserve like protections. You deserve benefits just like anyone else. And so I think this is a really sad example of that, where it's like, people believe in something so much. They believe in a candidate so much. They're willing to do anything.
And then they get exploited.
And then they get exploited. And I'm honestly proud for her staff for stepping up and being like, you know what? No, we want to see you run this campaign the way that you claim you're going to want to run the city. And just because we believe in your vision does not mean we're willing to like prostrate ourselves before you like slaves to make that happen.
So then with all that, you know, who is your favorite candidate since you follow stuff?
I mean, I guess people are lining up behind Maya Wiley. Again, I don't really have a dog in this fight. I'm just chewing popcorn, watching from the back, some of the sidelines on Twitter.
Well, you're personal.
Personally, I mean, like, I have seen a lot of former Morales staffers have, like, joined Wiley's campaign. She's been endorsed by Elizabeth Warren, by Jumaane Williams, the public advocate for New York City, a very popular elected official in the city. AOC has also come out in support of Wiley. In terms of her platform, I mean, the thing about a lot of these candidates, and I just like, and I've seen, I mean, like, and just working in politics, you see this a lot. It's just so jargony and just like using whatever buzzwords are cool that like, what the fuck do you really mean?
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, but like, you know, she wants to do a, you know, a new deal for New York, universal community care. So like, making sure they're creating good jobs for people in doing child care and elder care, which is important. You know, she's thinking about a community-centered gun violence prevention plan, which I think that makes sense. Universal health coverage, talking about transforming policing. I don't know what the fuck that means. Like, I've heard cops like talk about, oh, we're going to reimagine public safety. Like, no, you fucking not. You know, like, it's been co-opted.
Yeah.
But there are certain elements of her platform that's like, all right, I can get behind that. I understand the political pressure into like not state outright like certain things. Like, if by transforming policing you mean like less cops, like, you know, it's hard to say that. In her plan, she does talk about having like civilian oversight of the NYPD, developing alternatives to policing, things like that. So, I mean, I think it does kind of bode well, at least for my personal politics, where I'm like, all right, I guess that's cool. But again, I mean, it's like a soap opera to me. So, yeah, okay, last thing. The Strokes held an in-person concert at Irving Plaza for Maya Wiley last Saturday. I mean, that's pretty cool. So my actual personal favorite candidate, however, has got to be Paperboy. Previous guest in the podcast, he was a former Andrew Yang hype man. Paper, shout out. He gave us a little retweet, you know, when we talked, when I posted about the show recently. So, good guy, good person. They are now running against their hero, Andrew Yang, on a platform of canceling rent, abolishing the police, and legalizing psychedelics, as well as establishing love centers throughout the city where New Yorkers can make friends, receive relationship and mental health counseling, get childcare and job training. And they have also recently been famed for their mutual aid and food distribution efforts. They joined protesters for getting their asses kicked by cops in Washington Square Park to reclaim their space and distribute hundreds of pounds of foods in protest of the police curfew, which was ultimately lifted. So these, they are out there in the streets with the people, giving out food,
spreading love,
kicking Andrew Yang's ass in basketball. So in Rolling Stone's profile on Paperboi, I feel like they hit the nail on the head about what's special about them as a candidate, writing, "Prince is a shimmering, kaleidoscopic example of what could be if the fear of mockery didn't prevent us all from thinking a little bit bigger." Which, like,
That's
what Paperboi really brings to the conversation. It's like, they are unapologetically who they are in terms of fashion, in terms of just, like, just being a person of the people. And like, it's like hilarious because they're not like, a city group executive in like a, $3,000 suit. But yeah. It's like, but they allow you to think a little bit bigger about like the possibilities, you know? And I really, really appreciate that about them.
Well, that's a good transition to get into the hip hop side of things, because we got Diddy, Jay-Z, and Nas have all endorsed the former Citigroup executive Ray McGuire.
Speaking of stuffed suits,
the video announcing his campaign was directed by Spike Lee, who also endorsed him. And the entertainers praised McGuire in the video that was posted on YouTube. "People come all over the world and say, if I can make it here, I can make it anywhere. That's the idea we're trying to protect." That's what Sean Jay-Z Carter said. Sean Diddy.
See, the thing about that fucking line, though, is like, but what if you can't make it here? What about those people?
Exactly. Because
there are millions, probably millions of people in New York that are struggling and not making it. What about them?
And then isn't if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere, kind of like saying, like, everybody can be rich? Isn't it the same spirit of, like...
It is, yes, yeah. But it's like, very rarely. Like,
exactly.
Yeah, like Jay-Z and Diddy are like held up as icons because they did make it. Because if anyone could make it and everyone did, no one would give a shit about who Jay-Z was.
And it's
just
like,
being another person that made it.
Yeah. Yeah. If you can make it in Afghanistan, you can make it anywhere.
If you can make it in Syria, you can make it anywhere. Let's get really, really real with the shit. Yeah.
So Sean P. Diddy Combs said that over the last 30 years, McGuire's was always talking about the people. What the fuck does that even mean?
I mean, Trump was always talking about the people, about how they're from shithole countries and how he wants to grab them by the pussy. I don't really know what you're trying to say there, Diddy, but that's okay.
McGuire's platform claims to push transformation again of the city's approach to public safety and implement a form of policing that is respectful, accountable, and proportionate, and a comprehensive citywide plan to create affordable housing in collaboration with each community that creates jobs, respects neighborhoods, and protects residents from gentrification. So, buzzwordy type shit, right?
Right. Oh, gentrification. Oh, accountable policing. Transform public safety. Like, okay. What is...
I'm not necessarily expecting Diddy and Jay-Z to, like, endorse Paperboi, but...
That would be sick.
You just would expect, you know, it would be cooler if they endorsed people that are more interesting, you know?
Yeah, of course they'd endorse. I mean, like, they're black capitalists, so they endorse the capitalists and the biggest capitalists in the race, the banker in the race. I mean, it makes sense. Class interest aligning. Like, that's, can't even be blamed. Let's be real. I can't even blame them. That's fine. But yeah, honestly, all these platforms, it's really hard to differentiate just because it's just technocratic jargon. A lot of times, and you have to go with like what their backgrounds say, like what have they been doing this whole time. And so now, with McGuire, it's like, you were a banker, so I don't trust you.
So here we are, we're two cats that live in Georgia, and you're an elected Georgia official. So why is something like the New York City election why is it something that people should be interested in? Even if it's...
Well, I mean, even down to beyond the public policies touted by these candidates, even the structure of the elections is somewhat of a preview of what may be to come for a state like ours that's, becoming more progressive, but lagging behind significantly. So, like, what are the implications of ranked choice voting for the way our election shakes out? Does a progressive make it through because people are able to vote their conscience? Does it still, you know, favor ultimately the centrist status quo? Things like that. And how the people then respond to it and having that expanded menu of options that comes with that. Mm-hmm. I think in terms of messaging, what people feel emboldened to say in a place that is more progressive, you know, in deeply democratic places like this, it often means that there is a, there, all it means is there's a more deeply entrenched political machine.
Yeah.
And so seeing how, like, those forces of, like, the grassroots versus, like, the moneyed special interests, et cetera, like, play out against each other, I think there's powerful lessons there for people in a place that is becoming more progressive, but maybe we can avoid some of the same pitfalls we see in a place that where there is that entrenched political machine, et cetera. And plus, it's like sports. I don't know, man. Like, it's so funny. So here's an example. So I went to a Hawks game recently in Atlanta. And before I understood, I don't watch sports. So before I like really understood what I was getting myself into, I kept telling people I was going to see the Knicks game because the Knicks are from New York. And I'd heard of the Knicks because they're from New York. Even though I live close to Atlanta, I had never really heard of the fucking Hawks before. And I think that's a similar thing. I was talking about like the just the outsized presence in the media and the public imagination that New York City holds, where it's like before I even know about a basketball team from my own backyard, I know about the Knicks.
Yeah.
And so before I even know about like, oh, what's going on with the Democratic primary for Secretary of State in Georgia, I heard that Andrew Yang is saying some dumb shit about Palestine or something. So, I mean, to an extent, it's just like forced upon you. Outside of the lessons it holds, it's also just like,
interesting, you know, theater.
It's just interesting theater. Let's be real. And that's a lot of like, you know, so a lot of what we talk about on the show is just like political theater and what it means.
Well, after the little break, we are going to talk about some New York rappity rap songs. You excited for that?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, we'll be right back. Okay, so in the music discussion today, what we have is we have two, what I think are contrasting rap songs that are on similar topics. So on one hand, we have the Jay-Z song Empire State of Mind. And on the other hand, we have the Nas song New York State of Mind.
Massively contrasting visions or impressions of New York City.
So starting with Nas, we've got New York State of Mind. This song was recorded in 1994 on the album Illmatic, and it was produced by legendary DJ Premier. Let's check this out. Got younger niggas pulling the triggers, bringing fame to their name and claim some corners. Crews without guns and corners in broad daylight, stick up kids. Oh my God, that he was going.
Yeah,
off
so I mean, like, shit. I think you have to also put these songs in their temporal context.
Yeah,
so, like, the 1990s, all time record high in violent crime. 1990 and the 3 years that followed were like the most homicide plagued like years in the city's last five decades.
I think he's
speaking to that.
Definitely you have to consider like at the time that Nas wrote this, he was like 16, 17, 18, you know, in that age range. So, I mean, this is like straight up observation of like environmental observation, you know what I mean? Like he was like in the, you know, not necessarily doing what's being talked about in the song, but he was living in those projects at the time and seeing the cats that were doing that shit. You know, I mean, he was seeing the police raiding and shit like that. He was seeing task force breaking down people's doors and base heads, you know, like, so having been a witness to that, it's kind of like a, you know, street level depiction of New York City. You know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, almost purposely wiping away the shine and the polish. And it's one of those sort of like exposés, like, nah, this is how it really is.
Yeah.
And then for also sure. On top of that, I mean, I gotta say, there's like three joints I feel in Nas's catalog that are, you know, his best work lyrically. And like, dude, the verses on New York State of Mind, y'all should go check that out. I mean, he was snapping. Whatever day he wrote that shit, he was snapping in those verses.
Yeah. And then I think it's interesting to note that, like, by the time the 1990s ended, the city was bringing in, like, 7 million more tourists a year. The city's population started to grow for the first time in decades. And that then sets us up for the context in which Jay-Z wrote Empire State of Mind, which came out in 2009.
Let's check this out, featuring Alicia Keys.
Me at the X with OG at a Yankee game. Shit, I made the Yankee hat more famous than a Yankee king. You should know I bleed.
I won't lie, this is a guilty pleasure of mine. When it came out, it was 2009, I was in college. Like,
I think it was in like a MasterCard or American Express commercial,
sure,
too.
Sure, probably all, both. Probably, yeah. But yeah, he's talking about like, oh, the movie scenes and sipping Mai Tais.
Yeah.
I mean, there's brief nods to like the realities of like, okay, on the corner of Salmon Rock, you know, there's the sirens are loud, talking about no curfew, things like that. But ultimately,
it comes into a sightseeing, like tourist recap of like.
Right. This is clearly like you're cruising through the city in your like the double decker bus.
Yeah.
Looking around at all the things like, oh, there's somebody selling crack out there. Wow, Maureen.
Look, I'm not even saying this with any sort of like quality or moral judgment at all. I'm just saying this is like the facts as I see them of how the song makes me feel.
And that's a good point. Aesthetically, in terms of like what the beat inspires, yeah, with the Alicia Keys hook inspires, it's like optimism. And you feel like you're standing in the middle of Times Square, which is the most touristy,
yeah,
like fake representation of like the lived experience of New Yorkers that you could imagine. With the lights and the everything, you know, that's what it's what's trying to make you feel. Even if he's telling he's painting a more complex picture lyrically than that.
For for those who are old enough to remember, you know, 2009 when the song came out, pretty much everything that happened with the song, because it was a huge song when it came out, everything that happened with the song, I feel like that was the intent of the song. You know what I mean? It feels, yeah, like they were like, let's make something that's going to get played at the Yankee games for the next 30 years. You know
ain't
what I mean?
Those fools?
Let's make something that's going to be in an American Express commercial. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
like,
they're trying to get that fucking paper, dog.
Exactly. It's a very, you know, and again, not a judgment call, but it's a very commercial song, whereas New York State of Mind by Nas really does sound like some plucked poetry and put, yeah, over a beat. You know what I'm saying? It sounds very agendaless, whereas New York State or Empire State of Mind sounds very, very agenda driven, and that agenda is, you know, that paper. But there's nothing wrong with that. But it definitely is like a, you know, come to New York, it's a great place to visit, spend
right,
your money,
yeah, the
see
New York
the sights.
Tourist Authority probably like kicked him like some bucks. Like,
exactly. Well, that is it for today's episode. We are going to be back next week as we always are, but we are going to end it like we always do. Hey Joel, my man, can you please drop an instrumental for us? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Some feel the burn, some flash signs from the Yang Gang. I'm the dope one, spitting rhymes is my main thing. Call me Knife and stick this dope up in your main vein. I rap, get a nosebleed like a Strange Things. Like number 11, one-on-one and I dead them. Open shows like this cause I gotta rap when they let them. Mariah said, yo, we can't do a politics rap show if we don't go and talk about the Big Apple. Now we gotta rock a lesson. Go cover another motherfucking election. God
shout out
damn
to my taxi cab drivers, my dog walkers, all the hawkers of the hot dogs, all my other New Yorkers. You might never have heard of me. My name is Miss Parkin. I've been watching the options for office. You got a parts through. Got yourself a banker. Some be repping the Yankee. A whole lot of moderates, couple of left flankers. Some float to the surface and others sunk like an anchor. But however you want to rank them, hey, it's your choice to make. But I'm weighing into the debate and here's my only statement. Cancel rent, spread love, show some love for paper. How goes New York? Then so goes the nation. So here's a little conversation about your race for mayor.
Ha ha, Dope Knife.
I'm Lingua Franca.
And we are waiting on reparations.
Hurry up.
See you next week.
Listen to Waiting on Reparations on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.